I do desire y'all's prayers and the courtesy of your attention this evening. Have a little thought that the Lord gave me this afternoon that I'd like to share with you all. Have y'all heard the saying that an idle mind is the devil's playground? That, you know, if you just have an empty mind, the devil can get in there and do something with it. And when the Lord gave me that thought, I got to thinking, have you ever noticed how very creative bored children can be? When they're sitting there and they're nothing to do and that mind's running in little loops on things. When me and my brother were smaller, we had an afternoon. Actually, I think it was the morning when we started running our idle minds. And we were in the living room. It was a 10-foot wide by 20-foot long room, pretty nice size room, and we were playing Hot Wheels. And after a while, it was getting boring. We were just playing Hot Wheels, just pushing those Hot Wheels around. I'm not sure which one of us had the next idea, but somehow between the two of us, we got to thinking and said, you know, if you take flour and sprinkle it, it makes what looks like snow on the floor. And you can drive your Hot Wheels in and it leaves tracks just like in the snow. So that re-intrigued us into playing Hot Wheels, and before it was done, we had made it snow over the entire 10 by 20 foot living room. My mother had had a 5-pound bag of flour in a big old Tupperware container, and there was no flour left in that container. And now the floor on this old living room was a old tongue and groove board floor. Flour down in there. Flour, I mean, when I say everything, we put it over the couch, over the chairs. We covered everything. We were enjoying ourselves. And then Mom came in the room. And all she did is she took a look and she locked us in the living room and went back upstairs. Soon Dad came home and the front door comes into the living room. He walked in the house, took a look. I think he muttered something like, oh my, what's going on? And we knew we were in trouble. I mean, Mom, when Mom locks you in a room and disappears, you're in trouble. So Dad went on upstairs, and when he came back downstairs, he decided that we would get spanked. And being the man of wisdom he was contemplating, how do I really make a lesson with these two young boys? And he got to thinking, well, if a dog gets in the chicken pen and you beat it with the chicken, it probably won't mess with chickens again. So we got whooped with Tupperware. And, you know, we're God's children. And have you ever thought what happens to us when we get bored? When we allow ourselves to be idle? Do you think, how many of you are good at shutting your minds off? Can you just say, okay, I don't have anything to do. I'm just going to turn my mind off for a while. If you're like me, when I have nothing to do, it's almost like the mind kicks into overdrive. Says, okay, you've got time to think. Let's start going down these rabbit holes. But I want us to turn now to Luke. Luke chapter 11. Starting in verse 24. Says, when the unclean spirit is gone out of a man, he walketh through dry places, seeking rest and finding none. He saith, I will return unto my house whence I came out. And when he cometh, he findeth it swept and garnished. Then goeth he and taketh to him 7 other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter in and dwell there. And the last state of that man is worse than the first. Now reading this, it says, when the unclean spirit is gone out of a man. Now, it doesn't explicitly say that this person had cleaned up his life to follow the Lord, but generally my experience has been talking to various people and in my own attempt to get free from the devil, the unclean spirits generally don't leave willingly. They're not going to just get up and wander off and give you a chance to tidy things up before they come back. So this little parable is talking about someone who had cleaned up their life, gotten saved, cleaned up their life, swept, garnished, decorated. You know, garnished, have you ever gone to a fancy restaurant and they have the things on the plate that really aren't edible? It's there to make it look presentable, make it look appealing. And this is saying somebody had taken the time in their life, in their heart, to go through, clean this clutter out, clean it, make this heart appealing, make it to be an attractive place. I'm going to say ready for guests or somebody to come in and dwell. And then they didn't do anything else. If you think about idle, they were idle. It's all cleaned up. They didn't go out and invite the Holy Spirit in. They didn't guard the door. They didn't look at it and say, okay, do I need to keep it dusted? Is there things I need? It was cleaned up. It was looking pretty. And I'm gonna sit back and enjoy it right now. It's nice. And then that spirit came wandering back, didn't it? That spirit was curious. I haven't found a person to get into yet, and I'm coming around. And hey, look, there's that heart I used to live in. I wonder what kind of condition it's in. I don't see anybody by the door. That's a good sign. In fact, actually, it looks like the door is open. I'm going to sneak in and take a peek. This place is nicer than I remembered. It's nice enough that some of the other buddies I met while I was wandering around, we could all live in here. And the spirit moves back in. And it says the end of that man was worse than the beginning. All because after he cleaned up his life, he was idle. Doing nothing. Didn't say he was doing anything bad. Just doing nothing. So now let's go to James. James chapter 4. Starting in verse 13. Go to now, ye that say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such a city, and continue there a year, and buy and sell, and get gain. Whereas ye know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appeareth for a little time, and then vanisheth away. For that ye ought to say, if the Lord will, we shall live and do this or that. But now ye rejoice in your boastings, all such rejoicing is evil. Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. So what this passage is saying here is time is fleeting. It's passing by. You may be making plans. You might say, you know what, I'm going to go travel over here. I'm a traveling salesman. I'm going to travel to this town and that town, and I'm going to buy and sell. I've heard I can do good in those towns. And then after that, I'm going over here. And you've got your plans all mapped out. And it says, but you don't know what tomorrow brings. You've made up all your minds of what you're going to do. Your life's like a vapor. It up and disappears. And so because of that, you ought to be checking in with God and say, okay, Lord, if you're okay with that, I'll go do that. But it ends there in verse 17, says that, therefore to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. How many of y'all would say that if you didn't do something, you would consider that you've sinned and worthy to go to hell? That's what the verse is essentially saying. You didn't do anything wrong. You didn't do anything bad. You just didn't do anything. And you're guilty. Sounds pretty harsh, doesn't it? That just because you didn't do anything, you're going to end up spending eternity on the wrong side. You know, there's a lot of religious teachings and practices that focus on thou shalt not. But you know, some of the Ten Commandments don't have the word not in there. What does it say we're supposed to do to our parents? Thou shalt not honor them? No. You need to honor them. You should be honoring them. It's the first commandment with promise. But a lot of times we get to focusing on the stuff that we've been told not to do. And because we're not doing that, we start feeling a security. We start feeling I'm doing pretty good. The story about the Pharisee and the publican in the temple praying. Remember when the Lord talked about that? The Pharisee, I do this, I do that, I do this, I do that. And I'm not like this guy over here. I'm so glad I'm not doing what he's doing. When it came to the results of the prayers, which man's prayers did the Lord look to? He seemed to consider that Pharisee's prayer empty. Because he may have been doing all the right things outwardly, but what was he doing for the Lord? Where was his heart? Let me ask it differently. Was he over there trying to encourage the publican to do better? No. He was all caught up in the how good I am. And he wasn't, dare I say, doing any outreach to the publican. He wasn't over there, brother, I can help you. I can encourage you. Do you want me to help? Do you want me to help teach you some of the law? You know, maybe go over some things and we can start with little things and work you up to where you have better understanding and eventually get you to where you can join the Pharisees? We have no record of that, just that I'm doing good and I'm not doing bad and I'm better than this man. 2 Samuel 11 and 1. Not going to turn to it, just going to read it. It says, and it came to pass after the year was expired, at the time when kings go forth to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel. And they destroyed the children of Amnon and besieged Rabbah. But David tarried still at Jerusalem. Now this is the opening passage of one of David's biggest mistakes. And it started out because he didn't do something he should have been doing. It didn't start out because he said, I'm going to go do wrong. I'm tired of living right. It was time for him to go out and take care of some business. And he recognized the business needed to be taken care of. He looked at the men around him, the soldiers, said, y'all can handle that. I'm tired. I ended up back in the city wandering around on the rooftop, just looking around. Doesn't that sound like just being idle? And look what transpired from his idleness. He saw with his eyes first because he was idle. And then he mentally started contemplating what he had seen, pondering it. Before long, acts of indecency, and it culminated in murder. All because he started out being idle. Not because he said, I'm going to go do some big wicked sin. But just, there's something I ought to be doing good that I'm not doing. And because I've got men and soldiers that can take care of it for me, I don't see the need. Somebody else is handling it. Why? I'm not necessary. Do you think if David had to do it over again, knowing the outcome of his idleness, do you think he would have stayed in town? Knowing that he had to confess before the Lord that he had sinned and beg for mercy while his child died because of his idleness that led to that? Let's go to 1 Timothy. Chapter 5, verse 13. And it says, "And withal they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but tattlers also, and busybodies, speaking things which they ought not." Now, this is a passage where Paul is kind of, I'm going to say, speaking to and maybe speaking about some of the younger widows in the community there. And what he's warning them against is idleness. You know, you may have had something bad happen in your life and find that you've now, you know, because of the decease of your husband, you've inherited land and property and maybe servants to work the fields, and, you know, you've got some time on your hand. And look at the list of what starts out. Tattlers. Now, the definition of a tattler, and I looked up some of these words, it means an idle or trifling talker, one who boils over with impertinent talk. So it starts off with somebody that just goes around and talks a lot. Just wanders up to people, "How are you doing? How's the weather? Is everything going good?" "Yep, I'm having a great day. What about you? How's your kids doing?" And now, I'm not saying conversations like that are wrong, but because they don't have themselves employed into stuff, they have time to carry on lots of conversation. And eventually it talks about them becoming busybodies. Now, a busybody, it says, is used of people scurrying about, fussing over, and meddling in other people's affairs, being overwrought with unnecessary care. So the warning here is you're going to get idle. And when you get idle, you're going to start going over to people's houses and talking to them and spending time just, you don't want to be cooped up in your house by yourself. I don't know about you all, but I don't find myself the best company for long term. So you're going to naturally want to socialize, but you're going to do it in an idle manner. And so you're going to be in people's houses, dare I say, maybe when they're not ready to have you. And you're potentially going to see things that they would rather you not see. And you're going to start getting worked up over some of the things you see. You're going to potentially start saying, "Well, you know, the way that sister was cleaning her drapes, that was just wrong. She's doing it the wrong way." Or the way that husband spoke to his kids, that was wrong. He was disciplined, but he could have done it differently. And start thinking about that, and maybe even start interjecting yourself into the situations, putting yourself into things you shouldn't be. And then it goes down and finishes with speaking things which they ought not. Now, this one, it says, was revealing the concerns of their neighbors, disclosing secrets, magnifying trifles so as to exalt themselves into importance, as if they were entrusted with the secrets of others. Do you see the progression there? First, it's just filling the air with idle talk. Just doing something to kill the silence. I don't like the silence. I need some noise. I have some relatives, and when we go visit their house, it's a little distracting. They always have a TV going in the background. Nobody watching it. Just the TV going in the background. And if you ask them about it, "Oh, we don't like the silence." You know, that is a human trait sometimes. We don't like silence. So we want to fill it. We start just chattering. And then we start putting ourselves into situations that we probably shouldn't be involved in. We want to stick our finger in things, meddle with things. And then we start sharing information. And I was talking with a person once. I was teasing them about some of the older folks that they hang around with and about, you know, gossiping. And the person made the comment, "We're not gossiping, we're just praying for you all." Now, they were probably serious with that, but it made me stop and think, you know, it can start off with good intent. You know, I'm going to share what I saw happen with so-and-so so they can pray about it. But then what starts happening if your mind keeps stirring on it? And so you go back to that person and say, you know what? I've been thinking on that, and I really think that was wrong, and I wonder if he's done anything else to other people. And then that person might say, well, the other day I was talking to this other brother or sister, and they mentioned they saw this over here. I knew it. I knew he was acting out of line. And you can get uplifted in your heart, even though you're going down the absolute wrong path. Because you're now, you've taken your idleness too far, you're not doing anything useful, and now you're hurting people. Whereas if these young widows would have looked to their homes, maybe the fields, employed themselves more diligent, and maybe the business of it. Maybe I need to learn how to track the books. Maybe I need to see where the grain's being sold and how the cows are being milked and sold. And maybe I need to be aware of what's happening on my property instead of running around talking. Paul, eventually, his advice to him was, if you find yourself struggling with being idle, go get a husband. Put yourself to work again. Let's turn to Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12, verse 33. It says, either make the tree good and his fruit good, or else make the tree corrupt and his fruit corrupt. For the tree is known by his fruit. O generation of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you, that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. Now we see this starts out, Jesus is talking about the fruit that grows on the trees of our life. And he's saying, you know, your heart is going to be good or bad. And the fruit comes out of the heart. You're not going to bring forth good fruit out of an evil heart. It just won't work. But then he ends talking about idle words. Now, haven't we heard, while he was talking about words, haven't we ever heard the saying that actions speak louder than words? Have you ever had somebody tell you something, but when you read their body language, you realize that, you know, have anybody ever said, it's okay? Now, if somebody says it's okay to you like that, do you really think it's okay? Or do you tend to think, it's not okay? And you ask me, are you sure? Oh, yeah, it's okay. Do you feel any better? No. The actions are speaking. The language is, oh, no, it's fine. Leave it alone. No, it's not fine. You're in trouble. You might want to go ahead and leave it alone. That might be good advice at the moment, but you're going to need to go figure out what to do. But the actions oftentimes speak louder than words. In our lives, our actions will speak louder than our words. So I'm going to ask us a question. What kind of fruit do you think will grow in a heart that is idle? If you just have an idle heart, what kind of fruit's growing in there? Answer is you probably don't know. You're not there to look at the garden. You're not there to tend and weed it. Have you ever planted a garden where you just go out and you till it and you kind of walk out there and throw some seeds that direction and it'll be good now. I should have something in the fall to go eat. I'm going back in the house. It's hot. It's summertime, and I don't feel like working in the garden. I planted it. I'm going to leave it alone now till the fruit's there, and then I'm going to come back and harvest. What do you think you're going to eat in the fall? You might get something to grow up out of that garden. Sometimes there are wild things that will go ahead and grow. But more than likely, you better like weeds and thistles. And in Louisiana, at least where we live at, if you leave a plot of land lie long, thorns and briar patches pop up. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 5. Isaiah chapter 5, starting in verse 1. Now will I sing to my well-beloved a song of my beloved touching his vineyard. My well-beloved hath a vineyard in a very fruitful hill, and he fenced it, and gathered out the stones thereof, and planted it with the choicest vine, and built a tower in the midst of it, and also made a winepress therein. And he looked that it should bring forth grapes, and it brought forth wild grapes. And now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge, I pray you, betwixt me and my vineyard. What could have been done more to my vineyard that I have not done in it? Wherefore, when I looked that it should bring forth grapes, brought it forth wild grapes. And now go to, I will tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I will take away the heads thereof, and it shall be eaten up, and break down the wall thereof, and it shall be trodden down. And I will lay it waste, it shall not be pruned nor digged, and there shall come up briars and thorns. I will also command the clouds that they rain no rain upon it. For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah his pleasant plant. And he looked for judgment, but behold oppression, for righteousness, but behold a cry. You know, I asked what kind of fruit grows in a garden that is idle. The only thing that's going to grow is generally something that's wild. Here we see what happens when the Lord goes into his vineyard and discovers the wild fruits, the wild grapes. How did he respond? Did he say, oh, look, it's so cool, wild grapes. I get to make something unusual with these things. I have to figure out what to do with them. They don't taste very good. It'll be a challenge, but it's going to be neat cooking with wild grapes. Did the Lord respond that way? No. The Lord looked at the wild grapes and was like, totally useless to me. Of no value. To the point that I'm going to smash down this whole place. The hedges, get the plants gone, completely take it out. Are we idly growing fruit in our lives? Are we being diligent to say, what's growing there? Am I looking to the gardens in my heart saying, what plants are in here? Well, I recognize that one and I recognize that one. I don't know what that one in between is. Have you ever thought it could be that root of bitterness springing up? That root of bitterness that's going to trouble you? We need to be gainfully employed in the service of the Lord. Talked about being idle. I think back there to the verse there in James. If you fill your day up working for the Lord, when are you going to be idle enough for the devil to get inside your head and ask you to do something wrong? He might get inside your head, but you're going to be looking around, you know what, devil? You might want me to do that, but I don't have time this week. You got to go away. I just don't have time for that. I've got other things I need to take care of that's way more important. Do you know the Lord is good to give us promptings and leadings? He's good to send us things that we can do. But if all we want to do is sit around and say, well, sure'd be nice if that got taken care of, but I don't feel like doing it now, and I'm sure before too long, somebody will go by and take care of that. Maybe I can ask my neighbor to help out. Maybe I can ask my brother that lives down the road to take care of that. When are you going to run into your neighbor? Let's say you go talk to your neighbor. Maybe he's a busy man, so he doesn't have time to get to it either. And it continues to go undone. Doesn't the Bible talk about the idle man who doesn't take care of his property, how it collapses in around him? The walls fall down. Things go into decay. I want to end with a question for us. What does the fruit on your branches look like today? Are you looking at the fruit and saying, well, I've got fruit? Are you looking to see the quality of the fruit? Is it wild fruit that's just sprung up to give you the comfort because, as I mentioned earlier, you're not doing anything wrong? You're a good person? Doesn't the Lord say in one place about separating the goats and the sheep? And he talks about people, and they say, but Lord, when didn't we do this stuff? You know, we thought we were good people. His response is, it was when you didn't do it. He was talking about eternity there, folks, and people were being judged because while they had done good in their life, there was good they had been asked to do they didn't do. And it kept them from eternity. We all have an opportunity. You can come to the Lord and say, Lord, help me. Help me get the garden cleaned up. But then once you get it cleaned up, you need to stay active with it. Y'all pray for me.